Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The people on this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about, so please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation, as it's just opinion. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 359. On the podcast today, the Duchess of the Chart, Nicola Duke, Chart, 88 Energy, MX Oil, Strat Aero, BHP Billiton, Independent Resources, and Armadale Capital. Plus, I chat to Fox Marble CEO, that's ticker code FOX, Fox. Chris Gilbert, nice guy, and very interesting. I didn't know anything about marble as a commodity, as a stone, whatever it is. The price is not very volatile at all in marble, because it's a high-end product, but a very interesting chat I had there with Chris. And I've got to say, well done, Big Gib. Last night I went to London for Big Gib's Momentous Events investor meetup. And I've got to say, it's almost too successful, if there's such a thing. It was rammed with CEOs, company representatives, private investors, all chatting. And it was, and I didn't manage to get around many people, really. But I did chat to Tony Manini of Asia Met, really nice guy. And also his right-hand man, Stephen, who's the man on the ground in Indonesia, sorting out the mine there and the resource. And he's a guy who knows his stuff. Really is. Down to earth, no messing around. Lived in Indonesia for 20 years. And I know some people say Indonesia's corrupt. You say, listen, every government is corrupt. You just got to know, you know, what type of corruptibility they're into. And he said, I've been there for 20 years. I know things work. You know, I lived there. I lived in the jungle for half of that. He said, I know exactly what's all about. And it's nice having, you know, and that in fact, the next morning, 5 a.m. in the morning, he was flying back to Indonesia. So it's nice to chat to someone who knows what they're all about. You know, actually on the ground there doing the stuff. And he said, do you know what? I'm working with Tony because he's a lovely guy and he knows his stuff. He really knows what he's about. And he said, I even take a pay cut with Tony, because that's the kind of guy he is. But I'm his man on the ground. So it was really nice to get a background there. I met Chris Cleverly, of course, from African Potash on the podcast yesterday. There's a guy with a bit of energy. And, you know, he seems like he's a go-getter. He didn't hang around long. They chatting, quick chat. And he's got to go. And nice chat. He's laughing, smiling, really upbeat. You know, a guy full of energy that's going places. It literally was. Last night he was going straight away. He said, so I've got another thing to go to. It's lovely to chat to you. Thanks very much for having me on the podcast. Very polite, lovely guy, full of smiles. So it's nice to meet you, kind of people. I mean, lots of people. But also met, of course, Big Gib. And he's bigger than I thought. And Alan Green, who's been on the podcast for over a year. Alan is taller than I thought. A lot taller. I thought Alan was about 5'8". He's about over 6 foot. Big Gib's a big fella as well. Not fat-wise, taller than I thought. So it's nice to put a name to faces. And Andy Blow comes on the podcast. Many people. Paris on Twitter there. Who else there? Oh, I mean, loads of people. I had a few drinks as well. I had a shoot-off as well. So, Andrew. I met Andrew, Shepard there. And lots of people. Sorry if I didn't mention you there. But I think well done, Big Gib, putting that together. It was free food, free drink. And get to chat to some of the people behind the companies, behind the RNSs, behind the voices that have been in the podcast. Really nice. I applaud you, and I look forward to your next event, because I'm so sure, based on what happened last night, there's going to be a lot more of those happening. Okay, also on the podcast, of course, your penny stock with potential. If you know of a stock that you think has potential, then please click the link here at sharepickers.com. And don't forget, every chart I discuss with Nicola Duke is annotated and at sharepickers.com. You can see that, click it to enlarge it, and she's put all the lines on the target lines, you know, the resistance support, and it's helps. Almost, you can go through the podcast and look at the chart while she's talking about it and see how it works. Joining me on the podcast right now is the Duchess of the Chart, the lady that does the TA. It's Nicola Duke. You're right, Nick.
Hello, Justin.
Do you know, last night I went to a bit of a bash in London. It's a bit of a get-together for private investors and stuff, hosted by Big Gib, who's done very well in the markets. And I met Zach Meir, who's also a chartist.
I'm a big fan of Zach Meir, actually.
Are you?
I like him.
Cool.
As a technical fan. And he does cover a lot of stocks, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And he was on the podcast for a long time as a regular. But then he's contracted to somewhere else and he can't do it.
We won't name names, will we?
Yeah. And then he said to me, do you know what, though? Someone came up to me and said, oh, Zach, I used to really enjoy you on the podcast, but now they've got a lady on there who sounds a lot sexier than you. So I think they don't mind, so that's good. But you said you got a bit of a cold, so you're not sounding that fabulous today.
Yeah, well, I went to London and mixed with the great unwashed, and I got a cold for it.
Yes, I know. Sometimes I go to London, and because I lived there twice for 4 years, and I just think, why does anyone want to live in London? And I know it's amazing. For 4 years on two separate occasions. First 2 years, I really loved London. And the last 2 years, it got me down a bit. So I'm not from there. I'm from a small valley town in Wales. So I think there's not a lot of hills, too many people, not a lot of greenery. You know, I just think, you know, it takes a long time to get anywhere on the tubes. And I think it's a civilised, developed, you know, city, but everyone's travelling like rats in little tunnels under the ground, you know? I think it's odd.
I know. I went on Saturday night because my nephew has got a leading role in the West End, and the train was completely packed, tube was completely packed, everybody's Christmas shopping, no sign of recession there, let me tell you.
No, it just feels a little uncivilised. We're crammed into trains there, and it's supposed to be a civilised city. Anyway, let's crack on. So it's a big day today for you, because I know you
It's a big day today because it's non-farm payrolls, and the futures are normally hugely volatile, and there are some great opportunities. But, you know, after yesterday's volatility and the big ECB disappointment, it might be quite muted today, I think.
So explain what happened. Mario Draghi came out. Wasn't he expected to extend and make it bigger? But what happened there?
Well, the difference between Mario Draghi and the Fed is when the Fed did their QE, expanded their QE, or did extra QE, or even did QE in the first place, they really never hinted at it. They surprised the market. And the first time, the market took a bit of time to get used to it. And then the second and third rounds of QE, you know, the market caught on. Well, Draghi did it completely differently. He pre-announced his first QE 6 months in advance. And sure enough, he did deliver. But by the time he delivered, it was priced in. And then this time, they said, we're going to do more or expand it in December. And everybody went, wow, Draghi never disappoints, and piled in long the dollar, short euro, long stocks, long bins. And you know, honestly, he would have had to really do something much bigger than what he did yesterday to satisfy the market or what was priced in. Because another one of those central bank trades where everybody thought it was free money, and you know, obviously didn't learn from the Swiss National Bank fiasco at the start of the year. They're never free money.
But isn't Draghi, by his very nature, quite measured anyway? Very rarely comes out and hugely surprises, does he? When's the last time he really, apart from when they started?
He's never disappointed on easing either. He has come out and talked it up first, but he's always then come out and delivered. So I think people thought that he would deliver again, and he did, but just not quite as much as they priced in.
Yeah, it's almost like they're scared to surprise the markets these days, aren't they? They're almost forewarned way beforehand because they're scared of putting a bit of a jitter or a shockwave through the markets, I think.
Right.
Apart from the Swiss, anyway. So the good news
for us now in stocks is this was a huge reversal yesterday in the dollar, and strong dollar has been the heaviest weight on commodities. Mm-hmm. And if you overlay a chart of the dollar and say crude oil, that's been the heaviest weight. Crude oil didn't move yesterday with the dollar like some other markets did, and that's because of the OPEC meeting today. And I don't believe that OPEC today are going to cut production. So I think it's going to be one of those kind of waits that we have to get out of the way. But they might surprise and they might cut production, which would be bullish for oil. And even if they don't, and even if we just carry on as we are, the reversal yesterday in the dollar does mean that we could bottom in oil here. And we are, you know, we're $1.50 off the lows already. So yeah. I think that there's potential in both oil and gas here, and a nice bounce in copper today and platinum. So the industrial metals, iron ore is still a bit of a dog. So that does take time to filter through to stocks, you know, obviously because they're going to be reporting results from the last quarter, which has been disastrous. So like BHP that we're looking at today is still really heavy. But I think that we have the potential with this move in the dollar to turn everything around.
Yeah, well, hopefully. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where, you know, there's a rumor, wasn't there? Morgan Stanley was saying it's at, what, $20 a barrel. They're going to see that. Why do they say that? Where do they get that from?
That's so cool when they say that, because when they do come out and say that, it's always a sign that the bottom is near. And when they come out and say $200 oil, it's really time to get out of your oil stock. So, you know, these kind of contrarian indicators, like Goldman Sachs told everyone that they thought the euro dollar would drop 300 pips on Draghi yesterday, and it didn't. It rallied 600. So it's usually a sign that a bottom's close.
Okay, cool. Well, let's have a look at some individual stocks. These are a combination of what's been sent over and some of the ones I've picked. So what are you going with first?
So let's go with 88 Energy.
Yeah, now this is a very, very popular stock. And it's all about the oil play in Alaska. They're drilling at the moment and they give, you know, regular drill updates. And do you know what? Last Saturday, this is maybe a bit boring, but last Saturday I had a sort of time to myself. The wife and the kids had gone to their mother's, so I thought, right, I need to do a bit of stock research there. And I did the silly thing of saying, listen, I'll set up a 88 Energy group on Twitter. If anyone wants to join it, let me know. Did I get some people asking me? God, I was there all afternoon just adding people to this group. I thought, I want to do something else. So it's a really popular stock, and people are waiting for this this reveal, because they're getting results through now from the drill, and people are waiting for, you know, more in-depth. And Dave Wall has been on the podcast. So people are hoping that it'll surge like crazy soon. But what do you see in the chart, Nick?
So, yeah, a bit of a dip today. But I see that yesterday we had a really nice breakout in this stock. You can draw a trend line from the October high. It looks like, it's not really a classic bull flag, but it does. We've certainly got really good support at 0.5, and we consolidated above that support and broke higher above all the moving averages. I think that if we can hold sort of 0.57, 0.58 today, that we have the potential to continue higher, and we'd be looking at, I know it's a big target if we do continue higher from here, but it would be about 0.93.
Okay, well, do you know what? They have the thing is, the potential is huge. They have literally billions of barrels of oil that could be, and Dave Wall said, and he plays down the chance of discovering, but he said, you know, Alaska is the oiliest place in the world, and if you're going to get a big discovery, it's going to be there. So, you know, it could happen. Yeah. Okay, cool. So a lot of people...
So 0.58, 0.57 is really good support. If we can hold it, we should continue higher. The first upside target would be 0.70 and then 0.93.
And I've got to say, Nicola has annotated these charts. I'm looking at the charts you've annotated, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
And I'll put them on sharepickers.com straight away as the podcast goes. Okay, what are we into next, Nick?
The next one you sent me today to look at is Independent Resources Group, IRG.
Yes. Now, I've got to say, I hold some of this stock. So I had Greg on the podcast, and they've got revenue already, and they've got a very ambitious and a cracking team there. It reminds me, and I said in a blog post recently, of CEB Resources, where the guys in this company, they are from majors, they're from BP and all that stuff, but they're doing it for themselves now. It's almost like they put the band back together, and they're doing it because they have passion for the industry, you know, and they're not at the whim of some corporate guy telling them what to do. And they have an ambition of 25,000 barrels a day. They're only at about 200 barrels a day at the moment in about 5-6 years' time. So, and they're not the kind of guys to tell lies. But what do you see in the chart, Nick?
Okay, I see we've bounced for the third time off really good support at 0.508. Mm-hmm. Potentially a triple bottom. We're pushing higher. If we can close above 0.80, we've cleared resistance and we will head to the 200 daily moving average, which is at 1.01, which is the top of a potentially bigger wedge that I've drawn for you. And if we clear that, and with that triple bottom, we have massive upside potential. So I do think if we can clear 0.8, I think it's a really nice buy. With, you know, 20% upside to the 200 day and the top of the bigger wedge. Yeah. And then if we clear that, then looking really good.
Nice. Do you know, I like seeing these charts annotated.
Yeah.
I get a feel for it. Cool. What's up next?
So the next one we're looking at today is BHP Billiton.
Oh, they're a nightmare. And I've got to say, I'm hugely down on this stock. But it's one of those
things,
like I said, I've checked in my portfolio and it's there for like 20 years. You know, it's there till retirement. Hopefully by then, I won't reinvest dividends. I'll just take cash and it'll be a nice little income source because they pay a cracking dividend, which hasn't been, they haven't cut it or reduced it since 100 years ago. So, but now they're in, like I said, they're in the center of a storm. They've got the iron ore problem. And they've got this Brazilian disaster with 13 fatalities. So they are literally, you know, they're looking at a $5 billion fine. That's split with Vale, though. They're the biggest iron ore producer in the world. So, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty here. And this is playing on that uncertainty because they don't know how big the fine is going to be. And it's a disaster situation for them at the moment. But is there any relief here at this level?
There potentially is. You know, I've got a Fib level at 795. We got a bullish hammer on Monday. I think if we can close above 795 or 800 for the week, that we will have shown we've got some support here. And potentially on the lower time frames, we could creep higher. Really, though, we need to take out 800 and 830. And if we can, we should go back to test 1,000. But this really does need the dollar to turn around. This is not a sure thing. I wouldn't run out and buy it today or Monday. But just watch it to see if it can turn around.
Yeah, I mean, obviously,
like, it's still at the moment in a downtrend. It's at a level where potentially we could turn it around, but we need to see more signs. It's quite high risk at the moment.
Yeah, but do you know what? Talking as if you're a long-term investor and you don't care about the day-to-day machinations and movements in price, biggest miner in the world, cracking dividend, this is the kind of level that you only hope to get once every 10 years.
Oh, you know? If you aren't in it and this is something you want, yes, I definitely agree. And I do think that the dollar will turn around and commodities, you know, could have a bit of a recovery. I'm seeing the signs of slow signs of it, so
nice.
We'll see.
Okay, cool.
Up next is Start Aero.
Strat Aero. Yes, they do unmanned vehicle drones, basically. But I was trying to get into this for a while.
Yes.
I was trying to get into this for a while, and I thought. And it's been rallying strongly. And I thought, oh, I don't know what's going on here. I'm just waiting for a big pullback. But will it happen? I don't know. What's happening, Nick?
I think potentially this one could, actually. This is another one that looks, you know, not too bad. It's up 5% today, which is not bad. Not bad at all. So if we draw a trend line from the opening day price back in November 2014 and connect it through the October highs, you know, we've got some resistance around 9 and then 9.4. If we clear those, then we should go to 12.
Wow.
Yes. Okay. We're above the 200 day. We cleared above it after failing there in November. So that's now our support, which is at 7.75.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've, like, it's not much of a 200 day, but this stock has only been trading for a year. I do like this. This has potential.
Okay.
And it's trending higher. All the moving averages are pointing up and going our way. So buying dips back towards 775, I think, are good in this one.
775. Okay, that's where the entry point is. Cool. All right, marvelous.
That's where the 200 day is, and that's where your support is. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right. And next, Nick.
And then we've got a couple of requests. The first one is MXO.
That's MX Oil. That's right. Yes, they're a Mexican player. They've got Nigerian assets, but they're going for Mexican licenses. And they've gone through the pre-stage, the pre-bidding round. I think they're through one round, so it's looking good for them. That's why they've rallied. It's positive news from the Mexican license round. So what we're looking
at. It broke out of a declining wedge. So September, October, November, this one had a bit of a declining wedge. We broke out last week at the end of November, and that breakout area, which is around 2.29, 2.3, is now support. The daily moving averages are 20s crossed above the 50. You know, we could very well, it's dipping back a bit now, but that's where our support is. If you like it, mark that, and if it comes back there, I think it looks good.
So where's the support, you say? That line
around
there,
around 2.29 and 2.3, cool.
Marvellous, okay. And the last one, who's
the 50-day moving average. If you want something really simple just to watch, the 50, when it comes back, we look for support at the 50-day moving average. Simple.
Cool. All right, the last one is Armadale Capital, ACP. Justin Lewis, the director there, was on the podcast at the start of the week, and they're looking to sort of start working on some assets, which they're needing funding for. The funding is 20 million. It's not... And they're going through some processes there to get that sorted. But as yet, it's suffering from a bit of uncertainty in that area. So what do you reckon?
Yeah, we tipped this, you know, earlier in the autumn as a bit of a flag, and it failed actually at the third touch of the trend line, which I've drawn. We're now sitting right on the 200-day. I think if we lose this, we've got wedge support a little bit lower, about 3.75. So if we go back down to 3.75 and find support, keep an eye on it, because if it comes back above and then up through the 200-day, then that's a good sign. The 200-day is about 4 at the moment. So if that holds, or 3.75, it's not a buy right now, but if that holds, then potentially, you know, you need to see a good bullish reversal there, then I think it's all right, yeah.
Cool. Nick, thanks very much for all that, and I'll check those on sharepickers.com, and also the link there to Nicola's Twitter account, which is at Nick Trades, and so you're looking forward to this. How's your trades going, Nick? They all right?
We didn't have much fun last month trading, but so far December's looking all right, you know, and we were quite bullish on the euro, so we didn't get run over in yesterday's moves. Luckily, we did all right. So
okay, and
I'm some of the grains look quite interesting. I've got some. Yeah.
Oh, cool. But you know what? In equities, you think, what's the chances? I mean, Santa rally. I mean, you'd be silly to bet against that.
I would, yes. But I would like to caution. I see a lot of people talking about a Santa rally as though it happens now. The Santa rally doesn't happen now. It's Christmas to New Year. It's the end of December. So people need to be patient.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the Fed hiking rates is not bullish for stocks. I think when they do, and they almost certainly will, that they will be very dovish and talk about how flat the path is going to be. And I think that once we get the Fed out of the way, that we could rally again for Santa. But for the next week or two, people should be patient.
When are they going to announce this, if they do hike? When is that going to be announced?
I think the Fed is 17th or 18th of December. It's around there.
Okay. Yeah,
so,
I think if they do that, it will
happen. Something.
Maybe a wobble in the markets for a day or so, but I think they'll climb after that, you know, because it's been on the cards for so long. People will just be relieved that something's happening. I mean, how long can we discuss will they or won't they? You know, it's been going
on. And, you know,
years.
It is, yeah, and it is a sign of a good recovery. And they will still be, you know, lower than UK rates, so.
Nick, thank you very much. Have a nice weekend. Speak next week.
Okay, bye.
Okay, it's time for today's penny stock with potential, as suggested by you. Well, not you, unless you happen to be Money Sponge. Fair play, fella. I applaud you. You've been doing very well here. You've come up with quite a few stocks, and it's not easy to fill the form in. I try and make the form easy-ish, but you've got to get a certain amount of information in there to, you know, to show there's potential in the stock. So if you know a penny stock with potential, please click the link here at sharepickers.com. This is suggested by Money Sponge, and it's MNC Metminko. Metminko. I'm not sure if I pronounced that correctly. But MNC is a ticker code, Metminko. What does the company do? Mining and exploration with copper, gold and zinc exploration products in Peru and Chile. Or Chile, as Americans say. Chile. Why do they say Chile? Do the Chileans say Chile? I have no idea. We say Chile. Or Chile. It should be Chile, shouldn't it? Chile. Sweet Chile, man. Anyway, one of the largest wholly owned copper mines in the world at Los Colotos. I do like the Spanish, you know, muchos apreciados, the way it sounds. It rolls off the tongue, doesn't it? Anyway, would you say this short, long, or medium term investment? All three. It's short, medium, and long term. How many shares does the company have in issue? 3 billion. What's the current price and market cap of the company? 0.17 pence, 5 million market cap. What revenue and profit loss does the company generate? Skip that question there. So, next one. How much cash does the company have? Approximately £1 million at last interim. There's three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, Los Colotos is one of the few substantial copper projects that has been advanced to pre-feasibility stage and is wholly owned by a junior exploration and development company and is a credible copper recovery play. Yeah, I was chatting to Tony, you know, Tony, hey, Tony, and his inside man, Stephen. I say, Tony, what's the profile of copper, you know, say? And it's the same story, you know, copper's going to be in the doldrums for the next year or so when an Asian Met mine comes online. The copper price will be a lot higher than it is now. That's what all copper experts are saying. Number two, Los Colotos is an advanced stage and potential partners for JV have been and are in the progress of doing site surveys and due diligence. Number three, share price, a three-year low at an incredibly appealing entry level. So that's Metminko, MNC, suggested by Money Sponge. Thanks for that. Please do your own research. This is just opinion, of course. And start your research here, and please look into it. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear on the podcast. Joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Fox Marble. It's Chris Gilbert. Thanks for joining me, Chris.
Justin, good afternoon. Hi.
Now, take us through the company, fella. I mean, I've just been looking, doing a quick bit of research on your company. There are people out there listening, though, probably don't are not aware of your company or what you do. So if you can give us a broad outline as to what you do, what you're all about, Chris, please.
I will indeed. We're a unique animal, which is both good and sort of problematic in certain senses, in that we are a publicly listed company here in the UK, listed on the AIM market on the London Stock Exchange, and we are quarry owners and developers of very high quality and in some cases very scarce marble based in Kosovo and in Macedonia. So we have a very, very large deposit of different varieties of marble in these jurisdictions. We have licensed quarry sites on which we've currently opened five quarries from which we're extracting, as I say, this very high quality and very attractive stone, which currently we process in Italy, but for which we will soon be processing in our own factory facility in Kosovo as part of our process. So we are a resource owner all the way through to a seller and distributor and marketer of, as I say, our core products, which are block marble from the quarries and cut and polish slabs, as I say, currently being processed in Italy. So that in a nutshell is what we are. The unique thing about us is that we're the only listed company that is a pure marble company, I think anywhere in the world now. And we're certainly the only listed company that's operating in Kosovo and in Macedonia. And as I say, we're based here in the UK. So that's the unique bit of what we do.
Okay, well, listen, I'm a complete ignoramus when it comes to marble. I probably haven't got enough money to buy marble, but I assume, am I right in suggesting marble is for high-end market? Is that right or not?
Marble is an interesting architectural material. Natural stone is a must-have piece of the equation if you're developing high-end residential, commercial, big sort of hotel projects. And the nice thing for us is that although our product is expensive and we enjoy pretty good margins, as a percentage of the overall cost of a development, it's a relatively small piece. So somebody might be doing a sort of £350 million sort of office development or hotel development or indeed retail development. And the marble, the stone component, which, as I say, is a must-have piece from a decorative and an architectural point of view, might be worth 5 or 10 or, you know, sort of £15 million of that very large sum. So we like that position within the equation. And as I say, we have a very high margin, as you would expect for a quality of product that relies on aesthetics as much as it does everything else. You know, a brick is a brick, or a piece of concrete is a piece of concrete, but a piece of marble can be, you know, very varied in its look and its in design. And that's where the attraction for us is, because we come with marble that is very attractive and in some cases very scarce. The world is not short of marble, but it is pretty short of some of the marble that we have. So we like our position in the market with regard to that.
Okay, so if you go to back to basics here, so you quarry the marble there, and it comes out, what, you process it into slabs, or how does it work?
We take out block marble, or rather we take out marble which we shape into very geometric blocks up to, say, 20 tons. And these blocks of marble we sell to a certain constituency. So, for example, 60% of all block marble in the world currently goes to China. I think that mix might change a little bit with what's going on in China, but nevertheless, you know, a lot of it goes to China, and they buy blocks. We sell slabs through our distribution platform, say, here in the UK, to big developers who then cut and fit it into bathrooms, bedrooms, lobby areas, you know, sort of whatever, wherever you would normally see kitchens, wherever you would see stone used. And they are our two core products. We will also supply to people what's called cut to size, which is people will come to us and say, we want 1,000 square meters of tiles that are shaped a certain way. And this we can manufacture from our slabs. It's charged out at a slightly higher price on a per square meter basis, and that we're happy to supply to our customers as well. And they are our core products. We're not in the kitchen and bathroom business. We're a volume wholesale buildings material supplier who happens to own its own material because we own the quarries.
Okay, and as like you said, 60% is supplied to China, pretty much the market there, and that's pretty much the same with all kind of commodities at the moment. Is marble suffering, you know, like other commodities prices or not?
Marble doesn't have a very volatile pricing profile. It's not commoditized. There's no spot market in marble anywhere in the world. Marble has enjoyed a pretty stable, sort of steady incremental increase in price over time, just ahead of inflation. So, for example, over the last 15 years, the price of marble has tripled, generally speaking, across the board. We suffer if, I mean, not that we were in existence in 2008, but marble producers suffered like everybody else in 2008 in the crisis. And what the quarry owners did was they just dialed down production. But since 2008, the incremental increase in marble produced around the world has been nice and steady and incrementally positive all the way through up until this year. So whilst the world isn't short of marble, certain types of marble will always be desirable. For example, white marble will always be in demand. People will always want it. And as it happens, the construction industry in a lot of parts of the world is very dynamic at the moment. We are benefiting from the construction recovery that we're seeing around the world since the crisis. I mean, we've only been in existence since 2012, so, you know, we're post that. But nevertheless, you know, we see a lot of activity in North America, in Europe, in London particularly, where we've done very well, and in various other parts of the world.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask that. Where are your customers? I mean, at the moment, who do you predominantly supply to?
Right. We have sold examples of every single type of marble that we have extracted from our quarries somewhere in the world. We have 6 or 7 different types of marble out of the ground at the moment, and we have sold examples of that everywhere. For example, we've sold our grey, which is probably, along with the white, the most successful of our stones, because it's these neutral colours are always the most in demand. We've sold that in New York, we've sold it in London, we've sold it in Beijing, we've sold it in Italy. So just in various parts, you know, I mean, it's pretty global. And certainly our ambition is to be a global supplier. We're not restricted to any particular market.
Okay, and so are the customers sort of one-off customers, or do you get recurring customers?
We get both. So we've got one-off customers. So I mean, these are anecdotal stories, but recently we had an architect here in London who came and looked for a pretty small order of white civets for a small development that they were doing here in the centre of London, and by the same, you know. Sort of in contrast to that, we have an ongoing relationship with through our distributor here in London, Pisani, with Berkeley Homes. So we have supplied our grey into the penthouse floors of the Chelsea Creek development that St George's Homes, which is part of the upmarket prestigious part of Berkeley Homes, have developed down on the River Thames here in London. And we've actually we've disseminated those photographs around as part of our marketing activities, because they're absolutely, you know, they're stunningly wonderful, as you would expect. And these £12.5 million apartments have all been sold, and it has our marble in all of the penthouse bathrooms in that particular development. And that's an ongoing relationship with our distributor, and they have an ongoing relationship with Berkeley Homes, who are now calling for our white civet, as I say, that's our white marble, as well as more of our grey. So we have those offtake agreements, you know, that sort of progress alongside the one-offs that you've mentioned.
Okay, so I'm looking at your interim results here, and you say revenues for the first half were significantly lower than expected. Why is this, Chris?
They were. A couple of reasons. The first reason is that our activities in our quarries were hampered quite a lot in 2014 because of some appalling weather systems that occurred over the Balkans that hung around for months on end. The other, I think, reason is that our white marble, the white civet quarry that we opened in 2014 took slightly longer to develop than we thought it would. And I think the third reason is that we have a quarry site in Kosovo which contains an off-white marble called Illyric, Bianco Illyrico, and that we failed to establish until we didn't even get on the ground until the second half of this year. So we were disappointed with our results in the first half of this year, and obviously we alerted the market to that as soon as we were able to. What we can say right now is that we have been working very, very hard indeed on all of these matters, as well as developing our marketing, sales and distribution platform. And we expect the results of that to significantly impact on what we're able to achieve in 2016.
Okay, so I mean, to be fair, the chart of your share price is reflecting that sort of, you know, the statement. It's a moment, it's a bit of a touch in the lows of around about 13 pence. But you are confident in the next sort of 6 months that, you know, sales will increase? Or
I am confident that the hard work we're doing will start to see, you know, the fruits of that, and we'll start to see the rewards of that. And yes, our share price is as soft as it's ever been at the moment, and that can only be a function of the fact that the market is you know, short of news from us that you know, give people an insight into what we're up to and what will be taking place next year. But we're confident about the efforts that we've been making.
Yeah. Would I be sort of accurate in saying you probably won't need to raise funds at any time? Because I can see, I'm looking at cash and equivalents there, and it says 5.58, well, almost 5.6 million. Is that right? Oh, in euros in the bank? I mean, you've still got a nice decent cash.
We had 5.6 million euros in the bank as of the 30th of June, as you say, at the end of the half year. And we're pretty frugal with our money, you know, so we're not, I can't disclose obviously current levels because we're in our close period leading up to the end of the year. But at the moment, we don't have plans to raise any more money.
Okay, and I'm assuming if your sales are going up, obviously cash burn's coming down, is it? And do you know what your cash burn is at the moment?
I do, but again, I'm in my close period, Justin.
Okay. No, I thought I'd have a cheeky ask.
I like to be, you know, I like to be as communicative as I can be. But as I say, right now we're in our close period. So what we generally do as a company is we do issue a pre-close statement at the beginning of the year. We do this every year. You know, we try and keep the market, you know, abreast of where we are and what's going on. and we'll be doing the same thing this year.
Yeah, and so China, for example, like you said, the price of marble is not that volatile, but have you seen any demand slowing down? Because people are worried about the slowdown in China, and they're wondering when the slowdown in the slowdown. There's been, you know, suggestions that the slowdown is slowing down, but have you any inkling as to the economy of China? I mean, is that a big customer for you, China?
It's not currently a big customer for us. It wasn't in our order book submissions that we made to the market at the half year in our interims in September. So we're very pragmatic about the Chinese market. Our experience of the Chinese market is that it's definitely there. It's always slower than you think it's going to be because they just move very slowly. You know, I'm sure that it's right that the Chinese market is slowing down from its, you know, kind of breakneck speed that it was experiencing last year or the year before. But our ambitions with respect to how much marble we expect to sell in China in 2016 are not enough to move the needle on demand in China. I mean, it's a huge territory.
Yeah.
Talking about the kind of volumes that would be impacted by, you know, the macro movement of their growth levels.
Okay, all right, marvellous. Well, do you know what, you've educated me as the marble market, as it were. So listen, to finish off here, if you can, give me three reasons why I should invest in Fox Marble.
All right. We enjoy the benefit of a business that is inherently pretty high margin. There are high margins that attach to the sale of stone compared to the cost of extraction and the price of processing. And those margins are pretty robust. They're not there's no disruption in the marketplace, primarily because the marketplace is so fragmented. It's a business that's all privately owned apart from ourselves. It's completely fragmented. There's no dominant player in the market that can disrupt the supply-demand equation or the pricing levels. So we benefit from high margins. Secondly, we benefit from an industry where we are a must-have component within the construction industry, which is currently experiencing something of a renaissance since the crisis. So we think that that's a good place to be. And thirdly, as a startup, we have a great place to go. You know, we're not a mature company where, you know, we're flatlining from the point of view of revenues or margins or profitability. You know, we're a company that in the space of a very short period of time has established itself, proven the model, extracted the marble, sold all examples of it around the world in one place or another. And, you know, this is the moment to benefit from all of our hard work over the last 3 years. And like all CEOs, of course, I think we're undervalued and underpriced. So we think there's a place to go with this.
Marl, Chris, it's been lovely to chat to you. And, please do come on again when you have some more information you can impart to us about Fox Marble and the world of marble, which I find very interesting. Thank you very much.
I'd very much like to. Thank you, Justin.
That's it for the podcast, the weekday podcast. There will be a weekend podcast. It's a bit more throwabout, a bit messing around. Me, Pete and Steve, chat stocks and anything else we can talk about. Anything else we can fill half an hour with. That'll be on the podcast tomorrow. So listen out for that. And we're getting a bit more learned. And what I'm saying about that, I mean, I'm trying to be a bit more educational, the podcast on the weekend. So I give Steve now and Pete a bit of a task, do a bit of homework. But already Steve's come back and he's stuck. So hopefully I can help him out. I doubt it, though. Thanks for listening. Muchos. Appreciators.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The people on this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about, so please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation, as it's just opinion. Please do your own research.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.